out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 12th of June 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, it's Wednesday, it's halfway through the week. That means we have revisionist historian Carolyn Yeager with us today from carolynyeager.net. Carolyn, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, Sven. Thank you.
That's good. That's good to hear. And I also hear that you've finished with your Fatherland series over at your website. Is that right?
Yes. And that's thank you. I wanted to just make a little note of that I put down the last installment, which is an article about the U-boat blockade that Germany enforced finally on February 1st, 1917, in the hope of being able to do enough damage to the Allies that they would come to the peace table and they would come to terms to end this horrible fighting that was going on. And this was, of course, what caused the Americans, or gave Wilson the opportunity, however you want to look at it, whether he was reluctant or whether he was not reluctant, to come into the war. At first, he he broke off diplomatic relations, and that's what my last two posts have been about. Then a couple months later in April, he asked Congress to declare war. That was it, you know, that was the doomsday that brought things to the end that they came to, the terrible ending that then just led to World War II and what we have today and all the horrible modern world changes that are very depressing to even talk about. So this is so momentous, and it's pretty much been lost to most what we'd call white nationalist thinking people's interest in the interest of World War II, thinking that everything that mattered was World War II. When if this hadn't happened, If Wilson hadn't been the man he was and made the decisions he made and things hadn't happened the way they were, Great Britain was determined from the beginning to bring the United States into the war because they never would have been able to defeat the Germans. They weren't doing so. It was this kind of a stalemate. It would have had to have gone to peace talks pretty soon if this hadn't happened. So very, very important. And unfortunately, or maybe it's just as well, there's no more Fatherland magazines for me to read and find out what the German Americans were saying and were writing about and how they were looking at this situation in the United States, how they were looking at the war and so on. At this point, the Fatherland changed its name to the New World, and this was the first issue on February 14th. There was quite a lapse between the time of when things happened and they got published in this little weekly newspaper, because they were published much faster in the in the major news outlets, but they were a little slower to get it to their deadline was different. So in February 14th, this was the issue, the brand new called the New World. It was the same inside. It was the same format. Everything was the same, but they gave it this new name. Because now there was a real break between the United States, which they were all Americans, and Germany. So, the source of where I was able to look at these Fatherland newspapers, and so can anybody, where they're all, every issue is published in full, They stopped at the end of the Fatherland when it was called the New World. They don't have those issues up. So there's no place that I know of that I could continue with this that has any of this. So therefore, I am at the end, and I've been doing this quite a while, and I don't get too much response to it. So it's probably just as well.
I'm glad you've done it. I'm glad you documented all of that. I mean, it's important stuff, and people that are looking that up in the future, they can go to your website, and also people that are interested in this stuff, they come across your website anyway, and then they can find this history that led up to World War II. And I mean, today we're going to talk about a different type of war, really, the trade wars, the tariff wars that Donald Trump has been engaging in, because it does seem like he's had some success with these tariffs in Mexico. It's nice to have a success story, I think, to talk about for once. Do you want to let us know what's been going on there?
Yes, there's such an anti-Trump feeling, and I think it's kind of silly, not only in our enemies, but in our own people, who, because of Trump's friendliness with Israel and Jews, they just think he should be totally different from that, and they're just so against him, you know. And as though there's any alternative, you know. I just think we're so lucky to have Donald Trump in there, and he's been a good influence for a nationalists in Europe too. They've taken a lot of strength and hope and what would you call it, belief in their movement from him and what he's accomplished in the United States. So I continue to be a big fan, in spite of the fact that sometimes I kind of get kind of down about him and about the whole thing. But then right now I am encouraged. I've been really liking Trump lately. I like everything. Well, not everything, but I like most of what he's been doing. And I think he's been showing himself to be the one who stands up for us. At times, yeah, he says things and does things that don't look so good. But then he comes through again. And when it really counts, and he's the only one. He is the only one who could do that. And I was watching, of course, following up on his visit to Great Britain and Europe, which went well, except for D-Day. We talked about that last week. But then he comes back, and while he was still there, or before he left, he came up with this idea of tariffs on Mexico. Well, of course, it got all this criticism, as usual. But that it was a terrible idea, but it worked. And we now have some hope for the first time in quite a while that this horrible flood of migrants across our southern border will cease, or will come down to a little trickle again. We have real hope for that because of the way he uses these tariffs. Watching him, I watched this yesterday. They were Donald Trump and Joe Biden, his potential adversary in the election on the Democrat side, were both in Iowa. And such a contrast, you know. Trump was really at his best. And I watched his speech on C-SPAN, and I just have to say that I just was liking him so much. I just felt so good. Oh, you know, That's our president, and I really could relate to it. I really felt good about it. He made me happy. And that's pretty hard to do because the others make me so disgusted that I can hardly stand it. So, you know, there's so much good in Donald Trump for us. And what would the alternative be? It just doesn't even bear thinking about the alternative. And also the contrast between Trump's friendly and genuine kind of style. Some people think that's phony, but it's not phony. It's the way he's always been. He hasn't changed. He still stays the same way. He says he means what he says, and it might be kind of superficial at times, or you know, seem a little off the cuff. But he does mean it. That's who he is, and he's a warm and caring person. And then there's this Biden who's just so old, Sven. He just looks old. He's only a few years older than Trump,
and creepy.
I mean,
he's creepy, isn't he? With all these women sniffing their hair.
He is now. He used to be good looking.
Slimy. No, I'm just saying that the way he goes after these women and young girls, very young girls, like stroking their hair and kissing the back of their
neck.
Yeah,
well, he stopped that now.
Creepy Joe Biden.
He's finally, they've got him not doing that. He's being very careful. But he has done it all throughout his very long career. And he's been around forever. And he's popular he's always been popular with Democrats. But now he's just sort of passed, you know, you can be old and still be vigorous acting, and then you can finally reach some point where you're kind of frail. And he just plain looks frail, and he acts frail, and he stumbles over his words, and he does all these things that that say he's too old. And I said from the start, he's not going to make it. He's not going to get very far, and he's going to be knocked out of there pretty soon because of he's just going to look too bad. They're not going to be able to cover up his failings. And he doesn't come out very often. So the thing hasn't really started. But so that's my feeling there, that I think we're lucky to have Trump. And I'm glad he can be in for another 6 years, hopefully. And my thought is, what are we going to do when he's gone? Because there is nobody like him. There never has been anybody really like him that has reached the level that he's reached to be the president of the United States. There's so many qualities that I could mention, so many strengths that he has. He's a very strong person, and he's not being run. This is a point I want to make. He's not being run by anybody, certainly not by Israel or Netanyahu or the Jews. He is his own man, and these are things that he believes in. He believes that Israel is a good ally to the United States, and he really doesn't like Muslims. You know, I agree with that. He thinks Muslims are the problem, and Islamic countries and so on, even though he gets along and works with them. This is how he looks at it. And I don't think it's because he's being told what to say or anything like that. Pompeo,
I don't like him very much. I don't like Pompeo.
No, he's totally a Zionist, Christian Zionist, just like Mike Pence. Mike Pence is a good guy as far as all the domestic things go. He's totally loyal to Trump, but he's just a Christian Zionist. And these people have these beliefs that it's unfortunate. But, you know, we let this stuff go so far. It's not nipped in the bud when it needs to be. Nothing's done about it when it's not, you know, until it's so vast and settled in that there it is, you know. And as long as they believe these things, I'm getting off track here. So this is, I think
it's important to have integrity.
He makes him Secretary of State, but Trump is not going to do anything he doesn't want to do. He likes having people who talk tough in these positions because he thinks it's effective. So he likes these tough talking people, but he's not their slave. He's not going to do what they say. He's not in that kind of a person or in that position, I am convinced. So that's the difference between me liking Trump and people who want to call him a stooge.
I don't think
who
it's that.
We should get rid of.
I think integrity is the important thing, because I've even said about Jeremy Corbyn, you know, at least Jeremy Corbyn has integrity. At least he does believe in what he's doing, and that counts for a lot, really. Somebody who I do find interesting in that presidential race is that Pete Buttigieg, or Buttcheese, or whatever his name is, the homosexual.
Buttigieg.
Yeah, Buttigieg. He's got about 1% approval, I think. I think he's going to be knocked out soon. And
he's in Iowa, he's up to 14% now.
Is he? I heard he was
something,
last.
Or 12.
I thought he was last.
He's number 3 or 4 now in Iowa. He's just come up because he is very well spoken, and he's very confident and, you know, likable. But
apart from with his homosexual husband or whatever. No, he's got a homosexual lover that he calls his husband. E. Michael Jones has written a book about him because he was his next door neighbor. And he says that he was a kitchen window kid. And in his autobiography, he writes about how much he interacted with the neighbors and wanted to know what the neighbors think. And they never saw him. His father and his father's friends were all total communists. And he was just sat there soaking up this communism all the time. And then because he must have had neglect from his father, basically, he turned out to be a homosexual. And he didn't actually explain that he was a homosexual when he was running for mayor, that he came out with that after he had already been voted in. And since he got voted in and then said he was a homosexual, he's now got all these backers behind him. So they're putting him on these talk shows and these chat shows. But he's been absolutely dreadful for I forget the exact name of the place. I think it's somewhere in Idaho that he's actually the mayor of. He's been no good for them.
No, Indiana. South Bend,
Indiana. South Bend, yeah. Yeah, sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm getting confused with the names there. But yeah, I really really dislike him. I don't think Trump's got any real competition there, to be honest.
No, he doesn't. But just all these crazy Americans, and so who are not, you know, who are, again, just so multiracial, the multiracial group of them, who don't see things at all the same way and don't see America the same way. They want to destroy it. They really do. They want a totally different America made up of themselves and people like them. And people like Buttigieg. Yeah, Buttigieg looks so normal and talks so normally. He's got a high IQ. He's accomplished a lot, but at a young age. But yeah, he has very radical ideas. He's dangerous as all get out. And I hope he doesn't get anywhere. I can't imagine. Of course, if you imagine he and Trump going up against each other, I think Trump really hits a nail on the head, shows how smart he is. In fact, I think Trump is a genius. And he called Buttigieg Alfred E. Newman. And he looks,
he does,
that's just really what he looks like.
He does.
He's just a little boy, like a little boy who's a, you know, straight A student or something like that, you know. So I think it's going to be interesting, but it's taking up way too much of our attention in this country already. They're just playing up the politics in the coming election in the Democratic field because that's what people like to read about, and that's what gets the clicks, I think. So they keep playing it up, and we're focused on that way too much. And this
has immigration come up?
Go ahead.
When they were having this thing in Iowa, did with Joe Biden and Donald Trump, did immigration come up at all? if immigration came up in the debate, in the Iowa debate, and whether Biden was sort of calling for amnesty or whether he was trying to rubbish Trump's big win, basically, with Mexico by putting these tariffs on them and getting them to say that they would put soldiers at the border.
No, I don't think he even mentioned any of that. He's just saying dumb things like... Donald Trump is an existential threat to America. Now, they weren't in a debate. They were on opposite ends of Iowa and giving talks. And Biden gets these little crowds, which don't look too encouraging. And he's so boring. He says, folks, this, folks, that, folks. All the time until it, you know, just sounds so repetitive. It's just terrible. He's horrible. But everybody's so radical in that party and lineup that they don't have anybody who can take on Trump. So they were hoping Biden could, but he's not going to be able to. And so we'll see. This migrant deal. What I saw was that, the Dems are trying to play it down as though it's not nothing different than what's been going on, but it is different because, Mexican President Obrador has really been forced because of Trump's tariff threat, which he's using very, smartly, I think. And takes a lot of guts to do it because he's totally criticized all the time for things like this, but he sticks to it. He's the strongest man, the strongest willed man that I know of in public life, who you might say has so much to lose, but just goes out there and does what he believes he needs to do. And he wins almost every time. He does win every time. He eventually wins. You can't deny that. So this president of Mexico, who is a leftist, but knows he needs to get along with the U.S. because absolutely they need us more than we need them. You know, they do, and they would collapse if they didn't have all the money from trade that they get from the United States. And so he's trying to go along with it. And the Mexican people have this big thing about their dignity, you know. And whenever you are the less powerful country in a relationship, you worry about your being treated as an equal. And so they say, and this wall is so they're so sensitive to that. And so sensitive.
Wasn't Trump was going to put tariffs on them anyway to pay for the wall? So I mean, it was the same thing, really. I mean, he's threatened them with tariffs, and now they're going to put soldiers on the border. And he was threatening them with tariffs, and the money from those tariffs were going to pay for a wall to stop them coming across. So he's effectively got the same thing out of them by threatening with these tariffs that they said they were never going to pay. So, okay, they're not paying the tariffs, but they are now putting people on the border instead. So, I mean, that's quite a big win for him, I think.
Oh, yeah. And you're right. It's like Trump has been so criticized about that he promised that he would, that Mexico would pay for the wall, and that he, as soon as he was elected, he forgot about all that and doesn't insist that Mexico pay for the wall because they've said they're not going to pay for the wall. And I think he realized that that was not the way to go about it. He wanted to change the NAFTA trade deal, which he did. And he's made a much, much better deal for the United States between U.S., Mexico, and Canada. And that's just another example of how everybody before him just went along with these things that were bad for the United States. If they went along with the idea that the U.S. is richer, we have to hand over money, you know, to these other countries in our hemisphere. We have to hand over money to the to the Latin America and Mexico and South America. We have to hand over, we have to even give Canada a better deal than we get. We're gonna take the low road, the high road. And this was anti-American, you know, but nobody saw it that way because it wasn't presented that way. It was like what we had to do, what that was our responsibility as a responsible world power. Well, Trump has just changed that around and said, we're being ripped off. The United States is being taken advantage of. And he's done it with Europe, too, and said that people have to, you know, do their part. And we're not going to supply everything for everyone. We're not going to keep doing that. And he's, of course, got a lot of flack on that. And he stuck with it. And he changes his government around and gets new people in who will go along with him. And he's been extremely strong, not anything like a stooge to the Jews. And now it's people are starting to see, well, this looks pretty good. Even his Republicans in the Republican Party were against so much of what he was saying and doing. But now they're coming on board because they're seeing that it's working. So there you go. It's, you know, it's a totally different, it's very encouraging to nationalists and national parties everywhere. I think I already said that. I think the nationalists in Europe have been very encouraged and helped along by
certainly, yeah,
by Trump.
Inspired by it, inspired by it, and encouraged by it. But I just find it. I mean, it's really poetic justice, really. I mean, they're saying, well, we're not gonna pay your tariffs for a wall, and they actually end up having to pay for all these soldiers instead.
Well, that's what they're complaining
it's just so
about.
Funny.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. They're saying, hey, you know, it looks like. AMLO has not stood up to anything that this is Trump's wall. Oh no, there's a good cartoon that I'm going to send to you. You might want to use that was that shows it's from Mexico, a Mexico newspaper, Mexican cartoonist that shows Trump behind this wall, and he's putting the last. Brick or stone in the wall, and the wall has a picture on the Mexican side of Obrador's face with all beat up, you know, with bandages on it and so on, and saying something about the wall, and that it was Trump's wall, and that it was at the expense of Mexico.
Well, he's also cut out the middleman, hasn't he? I mean, if you think about it, if he'd had to collect tariffs in order to get the funds to build the wall, that would have involved middlemen, it would have involved administration, there would have been a loss with the exchange rate, all sorts of problems. He's managed to cut all of that out, and the Mexicans are going to do the whole lot for him now. Just provide the soldiers on the border and prevent them from coming in, if they actually do the job.
But he's got that club over their head saying if we don't have any results from this, the tariffs are going to go on. And that's the thing that scares them the most. And so, yeah, I think he felt when he got in that it wasn't going to work out, as I said, because he wanted this NAFTA deal, anger Mexico about that. And he managed to deal with all the criticism he got and keep trying to do it going, you know, taking whatever kind of, well, he's trying to get the Congress to act. The Congress is just totally, you just can't, they've just totally abrogated their responsibilities since they got the majority, since the Democrats got the majority. And it's just, it's absolutely indefensible the way they're behaving. They're not behaving
everything's personal with
voters.
Them, isn't it?
Their voters just don't care. They're so brainwashed, in this Trump derangement thing.
Trump derangement
they hate
syndrome.
Trump so much.
It's just all personal. Everything's personal about them. It's not his policies, because I mean some of his policies were the same as Obama's. It's just purely the fact that it's Donald Trump that's come up with them. so that they'll try to stop them just purely because of that. And I think that just makes them look bitter. And I mean, he just keeps having success after success, really. And a lot of the time for the coloureds. I mean, he's got more black and minority ethnics back to work than any other president has. I mean, he hasn't really done that much for the white working class, but he has for the minorities. And yet the left are still attacking him over this. One thing that does distress me a bit is the fact that he's losing all of his supporters on social media, and he hasn't done anything about that. He has sent out a few tweets about it, but nothing else. And you would expect him to do more as president. But I could foresee, when it comes down to it, I mean, he could just say, right, well, because of all that you've done, because of all this censoring of the conservative voices, from now on, you're going to be considered as publishers instead of platforms, which will open them up to be sued, basically. I mean, he could just end up with them being sued completely for everything that's on their platform for doing all that censorship. And that is open to him. I mean, because he may come out with, you know, a real, I don't know what the word is, like a tsunami against them, because it really was to do with the social media that got him in there. And all these people that were on social media with, you know, millions of supporters on there, people like Laura Loomer, Tommy Robinson, Alex Jones, they've all been wiped from YouTube and Facebook. And they were largely, or they did have a large role in actually getting him elected in the first place. So I really do want to see him come back fighting against them, because he does need to do that. But all the rest of it, like, as you're saying, I mean, his competition there is, you know, they're just pathetic. You know, I'm sure he's going to win. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Carolyn. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
Radio Aryan. Dot, dot, dot.